We actually have a spreadsheet that's got sort of criteria, which helps our underwriters kind of go through and toss stuff out if it doesn't fit. So we want something that's got a big cushion between what we project and what could happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Estate Investor MBA. My name is Tejas Gosai, and I've had the honor of helping hundreds of investors achieve the American dream by creating generational wealth through real estate. I've spent the past few years interviewing the most knowledgeable experts I could find in the business to cut your learning time and conquer the hardest subjects in the game. Check out rei.mba, which my team and I have packed with over 75 interviews and free access to our real estate roadmap, webinars, and publications. If you're listening, I am rooting for you, and you're already on your way to financial freedom. Cheers and happy hunting. All right, we're back, and I always get the best guests I can in the real estate world. Today, we have Tom. Check out his website, richdoctor.com. Tom, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Tejas. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, so you're from Texas. I'm Tejas down in your neck of the woods rather than Tejas. But let's get cooking. Tell me about yourself. Act as if I never read your resume. Give me some detail.
Oh, you bet. Resumes always make you look better than you are anyway. I was a guy that grew up in Texas as an athlete, pretty good athlete, obviously never good enough to see me on TV or have anybody pay me for it. So because of that, I decided I'd be a doctor, a sports doctor. So I started life as an orthopedic surgeon in sports medicine. I'm just used to hanging out with athletes. So that was my way to do that. No plans for any real estate or anything like that. I did the doctor routine, which is, you know, 4 years of college and 4 years of med school, and then 5 years of, actually 6 years of orthopedic doctor training.
Residency, all that fun stuff, boards, you went through it all.
Oh, it's just wonderful stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. No, it was a great, you know, it's 5 years of learning how to do things. And my last year was in Vail, Colorado, doing sports medicine. So that wasn't too horrible, but we did work. But you know, it was actually a great profession. And later on, I'll describe why I enjoyed it so much. It's because of the real estate, to be honest with you. But I was just following the routine, right? They wouldn't let me play baseball or tennis on TV. So I'm going to go take care of athletes. I got about halfway through my training in orthopedics and I'm watching these doctors. And, you know, we're trained on this apprenticeship model. So we're trained by guys that are 10, 20, 30 years ahead of us. So that's, you know, if you mirror them, that's me in the next 30 years, right? Well, I didn't like what I saw. So they were bitching and moaning, not having control, things like that. That happened enough times that I always tell people it's either blind luck or a touch from an angel. But I finally decided, man, I don't want their money if I got to have their life. So I got to find something else. I looked at a bunch of stuff and, you know, figured real estate moved slow enough for my dense brain. So I got into real estate.
What year was this?
This was probably about 1988, around there. And so that's when I got the bug. I didn't have any money, didn't have any time, didn't have any experience, so I could just kind of learn back then. But once I got out of all the training and got back home to Austin, Texas to play doctor, that was kind of a 10-year stint around the country learning all that stuff. I, you know, settled a few bills, and then, you know, there weren't syndications, there weren't meetups, there weren't, you know, a whole lot of seminars, there weren't in the internet. I literally got my first computer back then and typed in DOS commands. So there wasn't much you could do. You know, Google hadn't done its thing yet. So I did what I knew to do, which was to go buy something. So I went and bought something and started from square one there and kind of started to learn my way up, and lots of mistakes and a few victories. You know, things turned out pretty good.
You're being super modest too. You've moved tons of weight and you've helped so many people in the past. So we got to cover the 80s, 90s, and everything up to date, because I love hearing, you know, how you got to that point, but I only have 30 minutes. So hit me with how you made it through these cycles, because you've dealt with multiple cycles, ups and downs. Yeah. Interest rates have been all over. You dealt with recessions and you're still kicking and you love what you're doing. Catch me up.
You bet. And I'll try to make it, you know, in the 80s, as you know, the savings and loan crisis. So I didn't know much about real estate, but Austin, Texas was on sale and I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, with not two nickels to rub together. But that looked pretty cool, you know, where you could buy a lot in a really nice area for $5,000. That kind of piqued my interest. So I started learning. That's all I could do back then. I just kind of learned about real estate, reading books, talking to people that might have done it. And then came the 90s, which pretty much was the end of my training. I finished training in 91. And between 90 and 91, I was in Vail, Colorado with a guy who took care of the world's elite, right? This guy took care of every sports star in the world, but you know, all the people from Los Angeles and all the money people from New York came. So I met Arthur Rock, the founder of venture capital, you know, Steven
Spielberg.
Spielberg, yeah, that guy. You know, you can't recognize him when they're, you know, not all dated up, but you know, those are the people I'd walk in to take care of for this guy. He's pretty famous. And so I learned to make rounds a lot longer in the hospital. So I would spend, you know, I'd spend 45 minutes or an hour with somebody because he did real estate in Puerto Rico. You know, I'd just sit and listen. So I just absorbed people that were pretty successful. I got into the 90s, paid off a few student loans. In the 90s, that's when I started buying things. I just bought small stuff, which scared out of my mind. But, you know, I bought them. I actually started with student condominiums on the West Campus at the University of Texas. Back then, we didn't, you know, it wasn't online, it wasn't LoopNet. So I looked on the newspaper, the real estate section, there was stuff for sale. So I called the name on it. The guy showed it to me. By then, from learning a few things, I knew how to do the easy math on a napkin. It seemed like it was going to make some cash flow. That's all I wanted. I wanted money that came in that didn't require me to see patients, take call, do surgery, that sort of thing. Loved my job. I didn't know anything. It was like, yeah, I like this. What do we do? He goes, we put in a contract. I said, how do you do that? He goes, I'll do that for you. We win the contract. He says, great. What do we do now? I said, well, you got to get an inspection. You got to get insurance. You got to get a loan. I said, awesome. How do I do that? He took care of some of it. I called some banker friend and said, I'm supposed to get money from you because I'm buying something. He goes, great. Give me your cash flow statement and your tax returns. I didn't have that stuff. And I hollered at him for asking for too much information. So, you know, old dumb Tom didn't know much of anything, but we got the transaction completed and it made me about $100 to $150 a month in cash flow. Wasn't life-changing, but pretty cool, right?
Yeah, you did it. First one's always the hardest.
Yeah. And so, you know, I did that for a couple months and thought, this is pretty awesome. I called him up. I said, you got another one? He goes, sure, I got one down the street. We went and did the same process, took a little less time, still learned some new lessons, made some more mistakes. That one did pretty well. So I'm starting to get this crackhead addiction to passive cash flow, you know, and so I bought a whole bunch of those things. I must have bought a dozen of those things. And so I learned that way in the typical fashion. You know, when people find out that you'll close, they find out you're serious, they start bringing you more deals, people come in and want a partner. And so, you know, buying one at a time, went to buying, you know, 20 at a time and then 40 at a time, and other partners come in, and the student market finally got discovered, so moved on to other stuff.
How many units do you have in total in that area?
That's now, and I've sold some, so I've probably got 46.
You're so modest. You're like, I bought some. That's a big portfolio to get into, and that's your first run. So then you must have leveled up pretty quickly right after that.
I actually bought a 22-unit apartment complex before I knew what I was doing. Almost lost my shirt. Got out of it. It's probably worth a mint now if I had, you know, if I knew then what I know now, but you know, lots of mistakes on that one. And then bought a 40 unit complex there on campus. And then, you know, bought a small mobile home park because there was cash flow. Then I bought some notes. Somebody just owned the notes, owner finance notes. That was pretty good. So this is all through the 90s. Then we get to the later 90s. And I kind of had this portfolio. Didn't have 40 of them yet. I had like a dozen by then, you know, so it wasn't changing my life, but that passive income, it gave me a chance to change my schedule as a doctor. So I took Friday afternoons off. And again, you get addicted to that. So that's how over time things went to where I didn't need to be there as much. But I thought I was kind of hitting up against a ceiling. And I had a buddy who was a developer, did some big real estate stuff. We'd taken vacations before. And I said, look, I like what you do. Will you teach me? He laughed at me, said, you're a rich doctor. You don't need to know this stuff. I said, no, I really do. And so I worked for him for 18 months, didn't make any money, often had to cancel afternoon office so I could go look at land deals, and we were doing build-to-suits and stuff like that for other people. And I didn't make money doing that, but that led to a project that he and I did together, and we built a 155,000 square foot medical office complex, just he and I. And you know, first phase came out of the ground in 2001, second phase came out in 2004, and he and I still own it to this day. In that routine, since you were asking, was the kind of 2001, you know, dot-com crisis. That's where I learned that mutual fund managers that have a good year last year don't necessarily have a good year this year. And so I went with one of the stars and that thing dropped 50%. And so I got a little more prudent with my stocks and mutual funds. And I still had them then because I was following the advice of the people that were saying, you got to have stock funds, mutual funds, you got dollar cost average, that sort of thing. We finished the medical complex. We're doing our thing. And I will say that we also founded a hospital in the midst of that as one of our tenants. I can't recommend that for anybody. That's 15 years of my life that I'd like to have back. Not much profit in that for me, but we kind of got things going. And then two things came during the great financial crisis as we move on, right? I'd gotten a little bit smarter, I thought at least. Market hit a certain amount. I thought, you know, I've seen this happen before. So I pulled all my money out of the market. Looked pretty smart because it dropped from 13 or 14 down to 6,700. And then I gloated the whole time and pretty much kept gloating as it went from 6,700 to what's now 37,000. So, you know, we don't catch everything correctly.
Opportunity costs.
I felt more comfortable and more in control. In 2008 and 9, another partner had kind of found me. I was giving a talk for my friend in Arizona, and he said, Tom's from Austin. This guy says, I'm moving to Austin. Will you be our contact? And eventually we became partners. And so we had some land in South Austin, and we built a 250-unit apartment complex, or we were setting up to do it. We had the land. We got our debt from GE Capital, nice big capital provider. Then came the financial crisis, and GE Capital waved goodbye and said, no, we're not doing this.
What year was that, you said? Like 2008, 9?
Early 2009, GE Capital said, sorry. Very late 2008, they said, we're out of here. So somebody mentioned HUD. FHA HUD debt. We didn't know anything about it. We went and researched it, and we got a HUD loan. We hired the contractor. We built the thing literally using, credit cards and stuff like that. My partner would literally call me and say, I need money today for a rate lock. And, you know, it was that kind of beginner's kind of bootstrap story. And so we built that. It turns out we built it at the absolute trough in Austin, Texas, you know, and everything went up from there. And, that ended up being a home run. We held that for probably 12 years. Investors did really well.
How did you structure some of these deals later? Because I'm sure initially it was just you or maybe family. And so now you're dealing with investors. When did you make that break of like taking other people's capital?
Yeah, when I ran out of my own. It's funny, we actually did the medical complex, just my partner and I. So we didn't take investors for that one. I think that may have been the first one. You know, I talked to a lot of doctors for that because we were building a hospital, right? And you have to have a critical mass of doctors to start a private hospital. So that probably was my first sort of syndication. You know, they invested some, they didn't all invest. We just wanted to make sure we had doctors that we were working with. So I was kind of explaining the benefits to them. So that's probably where I started. It's, you know, what sales, right? Just finding a need for somebody else and filling that need. It was probably then, I guess we had, my partner and I had both had a short list of people, and you know, we're begging for money in 2008 and 2009. So I tell people I still have scars on my kneecaps from getting on my knees and begging for money during the GFC. But we got it, barely. You know, we had to finish it out with some hard money because people were holding on tight to their wallets. So it was probably around 2008, really.
Let's catch up to speed now. So what have you been doing for the past few years and getting through COVID? And are you representing investors all over now?
Yeah. We've got a pretty sizable investor list. And, you know, probably for the past 7 or 8 years of that first project morphed into development side of the multifamily world. I didn't do any more office after the medical complex. And so we kind of both decided that we thought back in the early, you know, around 2010 or whatever, that, you know, we thought multifamily was going to have a nice run. Good call there. We just ended up by default kind of on the development side. I actually pulled the development out of the company and started doing JV projects with other developers. And that's most of what we did for a lot of years. New product, all ground up stuff. Did a little bit of build to rent, just a little bit here, you know, the last few years, because that was kind of popular. Little foray into extended stay hotels, which is actually kind of like workforce housing, but mostly multifamily builds.
How many properties, how many units to date?
Oh, currently there's like 2,600, but you know, I think overall, you know, we've sold some, so it's probably, you know, upper 3,000s number of units, you know, probably transacted.
The structure, did you have to get like a 506B, or how did you handle the regulatory part of this?
Yeah, sure. I think probably early there may have been a 506B or two. We quickly went to 506C.
Can you explain that?
Sure. You know, there's got to be an exception. The SEC has exceptions to how people can raise money. It's essentially 506B and 506C. And a 506B, you can have accredited investors or a certain number of sophisticated investors. Sophisticated investors, somebody who's got a substantive relationship with the sponsor, knows a bit about investing and understands the risks. They can all invest. An accredited investor, somebody that makes $200,000 individually or $300,000 as a couple annually for the last 2 years, or at least as a net worth over $1 million. There's a few other ways you can become accredited. So the difference is that with a 506B, you know, you have to know your investors. You cannot advertise. And a 506C, which is relatively new to me, it may have been around 6, 8, 10 years. I've lost track. It was 2012 they did that. You can advertise, but each of your investors must be accredited, and they must prove that through a third-party source with a verification of accreditation that's less than 90 days old. So
we use verifyinvestor.com.
Yeah, that we've used them. I used Parallel Markets before, and you can have your CPA or attorney or whoever that can sign a letter as well.
Well, I love talking about this part of it too. As a fund manager, having these restrictions also helps us navigate what we're doing. It provides a good layer of honest relationships with your investors. And my father's a physician. I've kind of held my tongue on saying that this whole time, but my dad's a doctor, and I grew up with a ton of people trying to suck money out of his wallet all the time. And drug reps, remember, he used to have people stand guard because they would come in hooting and hollering. But I went to law school. I worked on real estate my whole life. I've represented investors. I do think physicians are like the best folks to work with on that side when they understand real estate and some of what they're doing. But risk is a serious issue. You're mitigating a bunch of it, and you're in the multifamily world, and then having investors and being regulated by the SEC. This is like the top from where we started, right? Because it was buying some homes, some single family stuff, and then you get to this place, and having that many units is incredible. You know, you got the whole back end system, you're in a bunch of different markets. So now that I know you've had a bunch of cyclical experience, how about right now? The past 8 months have been nuts. And, you know, right now is kind of crazy. So with investors, I'm constantly reassuring them, looking at data, sharing articles, social media information. What do you do? And how are you keeping it moving? Are you taking a bit of a pause, or fill me in for the now?
Sure. No, I think you always got to keep moving. And, you know, this is going to sound really maudlin, but maybe it's good that some of these people that started investing in 2010 realized that real estate doesn't always go up. Real estate is cycle. Life is cycles, right? You know, it's just real estate cycles might be decades or years long. And so, you know, this is just one of those. It's been a challenge, you know, the last few years. Projects started pre-COVID or during COVID. I'll tell you transparently, you know, we're putting in money as sponsors. You know, we haven't had any big capital calls or anything yet, but that's probably going to happen at some point. We've got 9 projects going right now. On the building end, when you're building something and it's minimum a year overdue, well, you know, loans start to amortize and costs go up and interest carry is expensive. Things change. You know, you have a pro forma that predicts or projects that you're going to do X, Y, or Z, and then life happens, things happen. You can control the controllables, but you can't control everything. So our job is just to protect our investor capital, and we are doing our best. Most of the projects are all going to do fine. I've made a switch over the last 2 years, but on the development side, we're not doing any new development right now. It's going to come. There's a giant development drop off. You know, we're delivered a record number of units last year, and there's going to be even a higher number delivered this year. But as we get towards the back end of 24, I think things are going to soften because the starts on apartments dropped off a cliff, and it takes a couple of years to get them built. So,
yeah, I'm happy you're mentioning that. There's this huge drought of new construction for homes. And I forgot what the number was, but like in the millions we're missing because of the past couple of years.
It's been that way since 2010. We've been undersupplied since 2010. And you would think if they build 600,000 units that, oh, we'll catch up. But we're like, you know, 2-3 million units down still, depending on whose numbers you look at. So there will be a glut, and it's going to be regional, local. You know, Austin, Texas, our rents are down 5% because, you know, everybody loves Austin. So everybody wants to come build in Austin. Well, now it's, you know, not so good for rent growth. It's negative, right? Other areas like the Midwest still growing. So it just depends on where those deliveries are going to be. I think most of them will get absorbed over time. And I think as we get towards the end of the year, I think these deliveries are going to come through. And then I think the rent growth is going to get a little stronger because there's still an undersupply. It's still miserably hard to buy a house if you're a young person, and the gap is as big as it's ever been between renting and buying. So I think long term, that's why we've stuck with multifamily. Why I've switched to acquisitions. You know, I'm not developing anymore. I am in the acquisition mode right now.
Well, I love what you just shared because I'm only multifamily. That's my only asset class. And I do preach, you know, we have all these supply and demand factors. And that's why this asset class is so preferred from the Fed as well. You know, there's all these different metrics you're in a few different markets. I'm only in one. We're a smaller fund. We are probably nowhere near as big as some of these other guys, especially you. With the markets that you're in and what you're acquiring, what exactly are you acquiring? Like how large, how small? Can you share, you know, some of your buy box and what you're looking for?
Yeah. Last year was a low transaction year, right? Because, you know, the cap rates and the debt, you know, it's too much negative leverage. People were, you know, having to use debt that's higher than their cap rate they're purchasing on, which is negative leverage. So not a lot of transactions went on. So we generally underwrite 2,500 to 3,000 deals a year. We underwrote 1,500 deals last year and bought zero. We bought none because they didn't fit the metrics.
Thank you for sharing that.
I will tell you that one of those 1,500 were under LOI, so it bled into 2024. But, you know, we're looking for close to 50% replacement costs, cash flow, upside. You know, there's a lot of metrics and it would be too boring going through it. But, you know, we actually have a spreadsheet that's got sort of criteria, which helps our underwriters kind of go through and toss stuff out if it doesn't fit. So we want something that's got a big cushion between what we project and what could happen. A lot of stress tests, you know, a lot of sensitivity tables, because there's some distress out there. And I'll tell you, if I don't give the name or anything, I can tell you this particular complex, you asked about size, it's small. It's only 151 units. Well, it cash flows day one, which is really a quarter later once you run some operations. But there will be a distribution projected for the investors after a quarter. And it's not a mom and pop or a new multifamily investor that used variable debt and has to get out, which is, that's going to be some good substrate for us to work with in the future. But this is a fund. This is a $2 billion fund that's, you know, at the end of its timeline and, you know, needs to sell, needs to liquidate. So it's a property, not expensive. It was probably $27 million a year ago. We're getting it for $22.4, 50% Bravo. Replacement cost, immediate cash flow. Don't even have to mess with rents, but there's room. So that kind of stuff. So we're looking for lots of upside. And we've been very diligent about never saying we have to do a deal. The deal's got to make sense. And so that's why we did none last year. We would hope to do four or five this year. Just, you know, we'll see what the market shows.
Thanks for sharing all of that. So looking at that many deals is nuts. Your software must be amazing. And yeah, being prudent is saying no more than you say yes. So are you looking at just 100 and over, or do you look smaller? What is it, all garden style? Multi-floor elevators.
Kind of, you know, we're looking in the Class B area because we just think there's going to be some really nice opportunity. There's going to be a lot of distress out there. Really, when you whittle it all down, it won't be a ton in the multifamily arena, but there'll be some. And we just hope to be the guys that find them. But certainly over 100 units, you know, prefer not to go below 150. But it's usually 150 to 250 units. We had a line last year on a portfolio that was like 1,080 units. That would have been a really nice purchase, but it just didn't happen. If the numbers make sense, we'll find the capital to get it done.
Awesome. Interest rates and everything that's going on, what do you think is going to happen in the next 6, 12, 18 months?
Yeah, I was at a meeting with a group I'm in yesterday. It was a great quote. It's, he who lives by the crystal ball will eat shattered glass. My crystal ball remains cloudy, but try to look at past data, try to look at trends, and feels like we've hit the top, barring craziness and black swans. It feels like we're kind of at the top. And most of the people that are smarter than me are saying, we think by the second half of the year, maybe they'll start dropping, and they're hoping for 75 basis points by the end of the year. I can't put my opinion in there because I'm just not smart enough to know. So for instance, the property that we're buying, we know what our debt quote is today, and we know what cap rate it's at. We are assuming when we refinance in 3 years that the debt's going to be 25 to 30 basis points higher than it is now. That's how we did our underwriting. If it's the same, we do a little better. If debt's really come down, we're going to do even much better. But we're saying, you know what? If things go up, we're still okay. If we don't do the renovation, we're still okay. We'll cash flow. It'll be low. So I think you want to make sure that your debt is less than the cap rate you're buying the property at. You know, not always. Some people have good reason to maybe do a little negative leverage for a year. Their renovation's really going to do some work on the NOI. But, you know, we prefer to have positive leverage. So that's the case in this one.
Thanks. So what do you tell someone who is on the other side of where you are, that's just trying to get into real estate, buy their first or second property? How do you motivate somebody with all the craziness going on?
Ah, shoot. Well, they always seem to be pretty motivated. And, you know, people get, and I do it all the time. It's kind of a simple formula. And I bet you, if you look back how you did it and how I did it, you get the bug, you figure out why you want to do this. I didn't want anybody really telling me what to do. I loved medicine because of my real estate. I had a wonderful medical practice. I practiced for 12 years after I didn't have to, and the last four were for free. So that's what real estate did for me. So you got to figure out why you want to do this, because it's not all roses and fairy dust. There are times when it's up and down. Once you get that, then you start learning about it. Books, podcasts, seminars, your podcast. There's enough information you could fill up every hour of your day. I suggest they start hanging around people that are doing what you want to do or have already done what you want to do, because maybe they'll help you maybe miss some of the mistakes that you've made, because I got lots of mistakes and I got lots of mistakes. I'm still making them, but hang around those folks. And then as you do that, you'll figure out what you like. Maybe it's multifamily, maybe it's storage, maybe it's something else. And then start looking at deals, because that you'll still get educated. And eventually one of them will pop out and you'll think, well, gee, this looks like it might work. Try to run it by a third party, somebody that's maybe been there, and listen to them. I didn't listen the first time. You know, people have told me that's maybe not such a good deal, Tom, but I was smarter than them. So I did the deal and they were right. And then you get in the game. I got a chapter in my book called Get in the Game. That's where the biggest lessons come. That's where you learn the fastest, you learn the most, and you just start doing it. I mean, like I told you, I started with an $18,000 down payment on a 2-bedroom, 1-bath condominium. I still own it today. And, it, you know, compounding is a wonderful thing.
It's amazing. What you've done is incredible. You know, I think it's actually in a short period of time that you've done a lot of this, because most of the big part was just in the past few years. But you're incredible. How does somebody get a hold of you? How do we learn from you? How do we invest with you?
You bet. If the easiest way and is just, you can send an email to hello@richdoctor.com. That'll get to me and my assistant. Website is richdoctor.com. I've got tools on the website that are free to folks, you know, stuff that's helped me over the last 30 years. You know, there's a newsletter that I put out every couple of weeks. It's either, you know, what we're reading or something that I've written. You know, sometimes something will just hit me, a mistake I've made, you know, how to maybe to avoid it. And that's the easiest way. And then we tend to put out investments here and there. And it might go to the same people on that list. If you don't mind, you know, if you sign up on the website, you'll be on the list. So you'll probably see the deals, and they're pretty easy. You just click delete or unsubscribe if you don't like what you're seeing.
Hope it's on the other side, right? Like, hey, yes, I'm ready to invest.
Yeah, you betcha. I love talking to folks. And that's what I've done for 30 years. I always end up on the phone talking to people. So I like meeting new people.
Well, I have to say, you are one of the most modest people I've spoken with. For the first 20 minutes, you never mentioned that you had thousands of units and, you know, you're in the position you are. So thank you for that. Thank you for the knowledge. Thanks for being here.
Ah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm Tejas Gosai. That's Tom from richdoctor.com. All the info is in the notes, and check us out at rei.mba. Thanks again, Tom.